It's Tuesday, 21st of April, and it's time to get your grin on with a Grincast, here to discuss the world of gaming from the past week. I'm your host Ace, and joining me are Nikki.
Hello.
Psychopathic.
Hey.
And our special guest, who I forgot to check on the pronunciation of your name. Is it Philip or Philippe?
Well, it would be Philip, but it's okay. Don't worry about it, honestly. It's one of those names that's like weirdly complicated, and just whatever you want to do is fine with me. Don't worry about it.
We have Tony here.
yeah, sure. Let me go. Let's go with that.
Philip Baumgart from here to talk to us about Chroma, Bloom and Blight, a game currently on Kickstarter. You'll be able to find the link to that in the show notes once you've finished listening, or while you are listening to this podcast, I suppose. You can check that out. But before we get into that and the various levels you can pledge at, what's everyone been playing? Nikki, why don't you start us off?
Okay, well, the usual, if you're a regular listener, you know by now, Azura Lane. Didn't marry anyone this week, but I've been continuing to just make progress. Something that finally happened, I finally hit level 60, weeks after Ace hit level 60, and Ace started playing after me. So, yeah, I actually decided, I realized that the daily sort of routine I do doesn't actually give you that much XP. So I actually sat down and did about 3 hours worth of story missions, got tons of XP, and now I've hit level 60. So I think unlocked all the game's features now. It was like that last little bit that I couldn't do, but now I can. So back to my daily loop. There's no event running at the minute, so I'm in that period of like just doing the dailies, saving up the resources to build ships, and then as soon as the next event kicks off, just spending it all on trying to get as many ships as possible. Next to that, Animal Crossing New Horizons. I, in a weird way, feel like the game is actually moving forward now. I'm a very casual Animal Crossing player. I know people who have, like, within the first 7 days had done, like, quote, everything. There is technically an end state in this game. You do see credits, and you can theoretically say you're done at that point. I just slowly making progress, but in the last like 2-3 days, things have really kind of ramped up. Lots of new things happening on the island, just in time because there's a new update coming on Thursday that's going to add loads of new features. So, yeah.
Yeah, we'll be talking about that a bit later.
Oh god, a little bit of Destiny 2. I jumped back in. I've not touched Destiny 2 for most of this season actually, but as of about 2 hours ago, the Guardian Games kicked off. It is a 3-week event in which the free classes, Hunter, Warlock, and Titan, can complete activities and earn points to collectively find out which is the best class. And we all know it's going to be Hunters because they're the most popular class. So, but who knows? Maybe Titans can bring it back. Titan for life. So I'll probably be jumping into Destiny 2 a little bit more over the next 3 weeks just to, one, try and make some sort of progress through the season pass, and two, enjoy the event. I find it difficult sometimes to actually motivate myself to play Destiny, even though there's so much to do. And trying to understand all that stuff is just mad.
There's too much to do. I go in and it's like, okay, which mark do I get? Close the game.
Yeah, Destiny 2 actually has it's quite a serious problem in that there is actually too much stuff, and that's not just that there's too much stuff for players to do, there's generally too much stuff in that Bungie have even said that the game is file size wise just too big. They actually can't put that much more into it, which is why the seasonal content, after at the end of each season, they remove a load of stuff. Because if they did another expansion, it's kind of screwed. So we'll have to see what they do for Destiny 3, which should be coming. Also, I've been playing a little bit of Exit the Gungeon. Interesting little title, sort of spin-off to Enter the Gungeon. It takes place directly after, but it is quoted as a spin-off. It's interesting. I'm still going to put some more time into it. I'm going to write some opinions for the site, but I like it. It's smaller. It's more bite-sized, I dare say. And finally, the big one I've been kind of hacking my way through But haven't finished yet is the Final Fantasy VII Remake. I've been taking my time with this one and enjoying it for what it is. I'm at a point now where in the original, it would kind of be coming towards maybe the last couple of hours of Midgar. So I feel like I'm getting towards the end now, but we'll see. A lot of changes, a lot of good stuff, a lot of weird stuff. Don't really want to talk about it until I finish it, though, and can give my final opinion, because I can't remember if I said last week, but the ending appears to have divided people. So I'm very curious to see what has actually happened and then give my opinion on that, because for anyone who doesn't know, I am a massive fan of the original Final Fantasy VII and absolutely loving it. But the one thing I will say is, since I've started playing the VII Remake, I have dug out my PSP and my copy of Crisis Core, which is the prequel. And as soon as I'm done with the VII Remake, I'm probably going to replay that because it's a really good game. But otherwise, that is me for the week.
So nothing in Remake has negated Crisis Core yet?
How can I put it? There's a lot of nods to the other games in the VII compilation, but you wouldn't know they were there unless you'd played the other games. At least at this point, nothing's been retconned yet.
Fair.
I'm sure they will retcon something, though.
Okay, Psychopathic, what about yourself?
With uni deadlines, because of the fact that I do a lot of essays means a lot of them are still on, unfortunately, so I haven't had much opportunity for gaming. This would usually be in the evenings, and usually with the Game Grin lot. So I've been playing a bit of Left 4 Dead 2, we jumped on Versus. I think it was last night. I don't know what any day is anymore. A bunch of us jumped on Versus. Been playing World War Z because that was free on Epic Store a couple of weeks ago, and it's interesting. It's because it's really good, but no one's talking about it at all. And I think a large reason is because it wasn't available on Steam. So, and especially because how there's no overlay in Epic. It's awkward to see what games your friends have. Sorry, and I think it's the reason why World War Z didn't really take off as much as it should have, which is a shame, because one of the other members, he actually said he preferred World War Z to Left 4 Dead because it was very kind of in the same vein of four player cooperative, moving through each of the levels. You got different campaigns, if it were, and stuff like that. I've actually, quite interestingly as well, I've recently gotten back into Paladins, which is considered by some to be a sort of free-to-play version of Overwatch. It was a game that I actually saw in Gamescom back about 3 or 4 years ago, I think, and I played it on the stand, and when I got back home, I signed up to the beta of it, and I really enjoyed it. But then I kind of stopped playing it for about 2.5 years until a couple of my friends have gone into it, and I joined in with them just out of curiosity, and I was absolutely hooked. I'm really actually enjoying it so far.
Awesome. You mentioned, we've got a bunch of community game nights going on at the moment. If you join our Discord, there's a community game night room. We've got a game going every night because, you know, lockdown. It's the evening UK time, so not really ideal for Americans, but make sure you have a look. Later this week, we've got Rocket League, Worms WMD, Team Fortress 2, Killing Floor 2, and Deep Rock Galactic. So, make sure you come along and join in with the fun. And the loud screaming that I assume you're doing, Psychopathic.
Yeah, I can't argue that one.
Myself, I've been playing quite a number of things because, you know, lockdown. I've finished Area 86. Been putting my thoughts together in a review, so that'll be going up on the site probably sometime this week. I had a look at Commander 85. That's a game that's coming to early access on Steam basically the year is 1985 and you're given a computer, which if you've watched 80s movies featuring computers, that means the computer can do literally anything. I don't know how to win the demo. I've lost the demo several times because, long story short, you get a virus and it sets off nukes. Presumably there's a way to stop it doing that in the full game or in the demo, but I haven't come across that yet. You've got to type in commands, or there is a basic mode where you can select them with the arrows and pressing enter. So that's ideal for people like me who aren't really up on computer lingo. It does spell everything out for you, though. So it's very interesting. I'm definitely interested in seeing how it progresses, and hoping they get a better model for the dog that you have in the game, because that's an ugly dog. Dauntless. As usual, I've finished the hunt pass, and that's there's going to be another one in about a week. Noita, still doing the daily plays. I've gone and installed some mods. There's one that gives random weather, but that's only for outside the caves, so you're not really seeing that. It's not just rain and snow, though. It's like it rains fire and
I've played some Noita, and I was really expecting that. That was that game is not like, honestly, you dive down into that cave and everything just goes into flames as soon as you look at it weirdly.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I believe I mentioned that specifically in my preview that things just you fire in the wrong direction, then suddenly everything's on fire.
But you know, that's something I really like about the game. That's something I really enjoyed about Noita. And not specifically that like any mistake you make just sets everything on fire. But I like that in that game, if you do nothing, things still happen.
Yeah. Yeah, the various monsters and enemies will fight each other and set things on fire. I also installed another mod to give a random color to the cape, so it's not just purple every time. It's a random color from like 300 different colors. Add some variety to what I can see. Simpsons Tapped Out. Still progressing through the wrestling event. Basically, Mr. Burns created a wrestling league, and this other wrestling league has come and muscled in. So now I have to collect metal chairs. Hundreds and hundreds of metal chairs apparently are required to unlock the statues and the ring and an outfit for Grandpa Simpson. Star Trek Online, I managed to get through all of the event that's going on, where I had to run around and collect parts to build a rocket. The prize was a rocket that I can launch at any time, or as well as a hologram for a small ship or shuttle that makes it look like the Phoenix rocket, the ICBM-style missile thing from the movie First Contact. Tom Clancy's Rainbow Six 3, I've on the GameCube, still been playing that. In the first few games, I've been going through all of Rainbow Six, and the first couple of games there were some issues where it's that this mission's taking place at night, and it's as soon as you start the mission, it's in the middle of the day, or this mission took place in December, and this one took place in March, and then this one took place in February. But Rainbow Six 3 on the PC seemed to have sorted that issue. However, I reached a mission where it was me and another person. We completed that mission and found out that the other two members of the team because you have a squad of four usually. The other two members had been on a different mission. So they'd gone off and done that at the same time you were doing yours in December 2007. And the briefing for the next mission says, sorry to send you back right back out, but you've got to go and save those two. The next mission took place in February 2008. So it took them 80 days to make a journey of, I think it's like 200 miles. And then the following mission takes place in December 2007. I have no idea. The teams were not speaking to each other through many of these Tom Clancy's Rainbow Six games. Sunday, I spent most of the day because I decided to have a day off, which I haven't done in a long time. I played Paper Mario Color Splash on the Wii U. And I always forget how funny the Paper Mario games are. It's genuinely funny dialogue. At one point near the start, Princess Peach is saying, oh, I'm Princess Peach, and this is my friend, Mario. There's literally, this is my ... friend. Having stitches. Yeah, really enjoying that. I don't know if I'm enjoying the game itself or the way it makes me feel. It's a strange one. And finally, I gave a demo a go for Chroma, Bloom, and Blight.
Oh no.
I couldn't get past the tutorial. It said you need to place the knight of the tutorial knight card using the coins, and
it didn't let you.
I could put down the coins. I couldn't put down the knight.
Oh no! Yeah. I don't know. Like sometimes the tutorial, it's.
It did say that it's unfinished.
It is unfinished. It is all very much an ongoing process. Let's just definitely say that. No, we're like always trying to fix up the tutorial as much as possible, but it feels like, you know, like this is just how game development goes, right? Like you fix one bug in one corner and then 15 other ones pop up in a different corner and you're like, oh my God, please stop. It's just a nightmare. Yeah, I know, like, we're trying really hard to pay attention to the tutorial, right? Because that's important. Like, I imagine for you, that would have been really helpful. You did make it past most of it, though. Like, the only thing you missed was the very last step. So, like, yeah, at that point, like, you played a knight, and then the game is like, nope, tutorial's over. Like, that's all you missed.
Right.
Yeah. No, that's...
Well, first we'll ask what you've been playing, and then we'll get into Chroma. So, what have you been playing?
Oh, okay. So, I've been playing a lot of Dota 2, and by Dota 2, I don't mean any Dota 2. So, what I like to play a lot is custom games in Dota. I grew up playing custom games in Warcraft 3, and Dota has kind of taken over that for now. There's one particular custom game I've been playing a lot recently, which is called Custom Hero Chaos. I don't know if you guys have played much in terms of like Dota or League or any of the MOBAs, right? But like in there, you generally have your hero, and then your hero has like a set of specific set of abilities, and then you just kind of play that hero of those abilities. And what Custom Hero Chaos is, it basically makes it so that you are forced to build your hero. Like you get a random set of abilities and you have to choose one, and then you get the new set of abilities, you have to choose another one. And you do that 5 times. And then you basically play kind of this mixture of like a horde mode / dueling mode, where it's always like a one-on-one duel versus another player. The really fun part is when the duels are happening, you can bet on who wins. And if you get it right, you can win more money. I don't get it right that often, which is often a little bit of a shame. But it's a very enjoyable mode. It's actually really popular recently as well. Like I saw today, it's at like 45,000 people playing it, which is kind of insane. Like for a custom game in Dota, it's pretty crazy. But I've been playing a ton of that. And then another custom game that was made by a friend of mine, which is called Attribute TD, which is just a tower defense. It's not really like anything special in terms of tower defenses. It's just a really good tower defense, and I like tower defenses. But I'm generally not somebody that plays a lot of new games. And by that, I don't necessarily mean modern, like games that were recently released. It's more that I tend to get stuck on singular games. You know, I'm playing a lot of Hearthstone Battlegrounds right now, for example. And that's just something that, that's just all I need, really. I have my Dota, I have my Hearthstone Battlegrounds, and that's keeping me happy. Battlegrounds is something that I find fascinating. So, fun fact. I have a little YouTube channel, and on my YouTube channel, I don't know if you guys remember the auto chess craze. Like, did you guys really notice that when that happened last year?
No.
No? Like auto chess. Like auto chess blew up. And there was a Dota 2 custom game, right? And it turned into like it had at one point, I think, 300,000 people in Dota just playing it. And then it turned into its own like genre. Like these days you have auto chess just as like the original, which has its own like mobile version, and you have Teamfight Tactics. There's just a big one that people I think are more likely to recognize, which is the League of Legends version, and it's based on auto chess. And finally, Hearthstone Battlegrounds, which is also based on auto chess. Right? And I was actually the first person to make like content for auto chess, which was very interesting. So point being that the auto chess craze was like this massive thing, and you know, like as somebody in game dev, everybody was like, oh, we gotta make an auto chess, you know, it's time to make auto chesses. And now all of the auto chesses are coming out, and I think it's just a little late because the craze has kind of died down, and it's just kind of a bit of an interesting little thing. But I like Battlegrounds a lot. To me, that's the one game like that really did it right. They made a very interesting twist on it that's a lot of fun to play. You know, it's like got a nice mix of RNG with a nice mix of like control over the game. Now I'm like slowly grinding up my MMR and that thing. It's taking a while though. I don't know. I like a lot of competitive games. I've also been playing Super Smash Bros. Melee. I'm sure you guys are familiar with Smash Bros., right?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, right. I'm one of those nerds that is still playing the one from 2001, and really, I don't want to touch the new ones.
Like, I also haven't touched the new ones, but I'll admit I haven't touched my copy of Melee for a while either.
Well, it's actually cool. Like, Melee is, funnily enough, Melee has the best online out of any Smash Brothers game. Because it's been modded so much, you can get like a version of the Dolphin GameCube emulator that's specifically modded only to play Super Smash Bros. Melee online against other players. And it's great. Like, you actually have really good connections and such. So I've been like doing that. And then, go ahead.
I was just saying, that's interesting. I didn't realize.
Oh, people love Melee. Melee is huge still, even today, honestly. It's a shame, like, because of course, there's a lot of things that are a shame because of the coronavirus, right? But Super Smash Bros. Melee had its largest tournament series ever. $250,000 prize pool announced for this year, and then everything got canceled. And I'm just sitting over here, oh my God. Why do you do this to my heart? I've been such a big fan of this game. You know, I've been following the scene for such a long time, and now it's just that one hurt. That one really hurt. I hope they can bounce back from it though. And then actually kind of like a similar note, something I've also been playing is Pokemon Showdown. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that, but like, I mean, I assume you guys are familiar with Pokemon. But there's actually a really significant competitive Pokemon scene where it's like focused on Pokemon, like player versus player. And there is something called Pokemon Showdown, which is basically a Pokemon battle simulator, which I'm not sure if it's sanctioned by Nintendo, but Nintendo clearly knows about it. Everybody knows, like everybody in the scene knows about Pokemon Showdown. It is used by everybody. There's no way they don't know about it. They still haven't shut it down, so I guess they must be okay with it. But it's just
that's crazy. They shut down everything.
Yeah, no, really. And like Pokemon Showdown isn't that small either. Like if you go on it right now, like I'm gonna just have a look right now. It's currently got 17,000 users online. That's a lot, right? And with Nintendo, like they must know about it because it's incredibly detailed. Like it's got every single Pokemon in there for every single generation with every single mechanic for every single generation. You can like put teams together with all of the intricacies of every single, like every single detail, like every move slot, every move set available. It makes sure that like, because sometimes certain Pokemon can't have a specific move with another specific move, or they can't have a specific type of attack if they have like specific IVs, is it IVs? I think it's IVs. I don't know. It doesn't really matter that much. Point being, it's a hugely complex thing that's been around for years that is used by all like Pokemon World Championship VGC players and all of that stuff. And Nintendo is just not doing anything about it, which is really odd for them. But it's a very fun little thing. Like Pokemon is actually like a surprisingly deep game. Although I guess it's not that surprising. You know, you put 20 years of development into something, and eventually you're going to have a bit, you're going to have a bit of depth there, right? A bit of content to work with. But anyway, that's kind of like been it. I guess I could include Chroma as well. Like I've been obviously playing that, but that's more work. You know, it's not like just playing the game. Right? But anyway, like I like these. I don't know. I'm very much like kind of like a multiplayer kind of player. If I were to talk about like single players, the one big single player game I've been playing recently is Hades. I know it's the fourth game. I think it's the fourth game from Big Giant Games, right? Like they made Transistor. They made what is that new one called? Pyre. And then finally Bastion, which honestly, I wasn't a huge fan of Pyre, but Transistor and Bastion are so good. And then Hades is also just a really nice new thing they did. It's a roguelike, and you just kind of like grind your way through a dungeon. Although eventually it turned more into like speedrunning for me. And eventually I managed to get one run in under 10 minutes, and I was like, I'm done. And I haven't watched it since. But no, it's still very, very a very enjoyable game, and I would very much recommend it.
Okay, well, why don't we start the interview portion? Tell us a bit about yourself.
All right, so I'm Philip. Some of you may have heard of me as Baumi. Like I have a YouTube channel as well that I run there. But like what I spend most of my time on, and I have for the past 5 years at this point, is on game development. Now, what I do in game development is I don't sit down and do the programming. I'm the guy that isn't useful without anybody else around, because what I do is I do the game design and the game directing. So I kind of just decide what goes in the game, what you know, what should we do with the game, and all of that stuff. I have, to this point, I've worked on a variety of different projects. I started out just kind of doing custom games, like kind of mods for Dota 2. And then eventually I started working on some like actual industry projects. And then I eventually was kind of like done with that, because I found it very frustrating to be, maybe it was just the one specific job I had, but I wasn't super happy with it. And so I decided to kind of like take things into my own little hand, and I made a card game. Not Chroma, though. Chroma's actually my second card game. The first one I made was called Disasters, which was, like a board game. So it's a game you can buy and have like a physical copy of. And that game I'm really proud of. I was really happy with it. It did pretty well. We sold over 5,000 copies of it. And nice. Now I'm working on something new, something bigger. So Disasters was made with just three people, me, my wife, and a friend of mine who worked as the artist for it. Now I'm working on Chroma, which what Chroma is, it's a story-driven, kind of like world-driven digital competitive card game that's also trying to be a bit more consumer friendly than other games you've seen on the market. So something that we don't do is we don't charge people for the individual cards. Instead, when you play the game, you just get access to all of the cards, which I think is something that's a big problem with a lot of card games. If I play something like Hearthstone, I'm going to be completely honest, right? I'm fine on money, right? I'm not rich, but I make a comfortable living. But even for me, like Hearthstone eventually just became too expensive. Like I was just driven away from it because I wanted to play it. I wanted to play it seriously. You know, I wanna get a high ranking. And when I do that, I need to spend $100 every 4 months, which to me is just unreasonable. Like you can't expect that much from everybody every few months. So there's really not a lot of card games in the space, though, that are cheaper. And by not a lot, I really mean hardly any. They are just all very expensive. So what we wanted to do is we wanted to make a card game that kind of takes a bit of a different approach to like the way it tells its world and its story. And we have a cool world that we spend a lot of time building, but also something that's a bit more accessible for everybody, right? Just kind of make it so that everybody can play, and then we figure out the rest afterwards.
Okay, how big is the team that's working on the game?
The team is actually like we've got quite a few people. I think we've got 13 people right now. Wait, I gotta go count. I don't have the exact number in my head, but we have two programmers. We have one 3D guy. We have one sound designer / musician. Then we have me and my wife, which my wife functions as a writer as well as doing social media. We have Aaron, who is our actual writer. So now we are 8. Then we have a UI designer. And then we have 6 2D artists. So we actually had 15, damn. That's quite a few people. No, but we have 6 artists making the cards, you know, because we want to really make sure that we are telling a story and that we're introducing people to a world. There's a lot of time spent on each of the pieces of artwork. And so the art team just kept getting expanded until, you know, at this point, 6 people. Damn, it's quite a few.
Nice. Where does your inspiration for the game come from?
Well, so inspiration is always something that I find a bit difficult to describe. So for me, the way a lot of this kind of design work goes is that it's not so much I have this one burst of, there we go, I have an idea. It's more an idea slowly starts forming in my head, right? Like I have this concept that I know that there's something in there that I want to do, but I don't know what it is yet. And then it just slowly keeps developing and I slowly start figuring out, here I see a problem. What is the solution to this problem? And then it slowly starts forming. In the end, I'm not going to lie, the game carries heavy inspirations from Hearthstone, Magic, pretty much most of the traditional card games. It has like a variety of aspects from a variety of different games. Because what it really tries to be is it doesn't try to be a revolutionary new thing that you have never, ever seen before. This is a card game like you have never seen it. No, what it is it is a card game and it is good as a digital competitive card game. It works like card games you have seen before. If you've played Magic, you're going to be familiar with this. If you've played Hearthstone, you're going to be familiar with this. Because it is not trying to be a complete reinvention of the genre. It is supposed to be a very nice, strong, solid entry into the genre. And so having, if we want to talk about inspirations in that way, then there's definitely a lot of elements it shares with other games. But the overall core mechanics, the core elements that really inspired me to make the game in the first place were more like something where I was like, okay, I have some things in my head that are slowly piling up to like a problem, and then eventually it like snapped into place. I'm like, this is a nice and simple solution that would actually work really well, I think, and would create an interesting game. And then started kind of like prototyping it on Tabletop Simulator. By the way, to anybody that wants to do game dev, get Tabletop Simulator. It's your best friend. That's the greatest thing. Like every time I make anything, it goes on Tabletop Simulator first, because that thing is just absolutely fantastic.
Okay, what prompted the Kickstarter campaign?
Well, we have done we did a Kickstarter for Disasters, right? That was my previous game. But honestly, for Disasters, it was a very small project. Like, we asked for a grand total of 7,000 euros, which, like, I mean, it's a good chunk of money, right? But it's not the world. It's something that I felt like we could reach. And I was really just trying to aim, like, I was aiming to print, like, 1,000 copies of the game, you know, ship them out and then just be done with it. But Disasters kind of ended up blowing a little bit out of proportion. We ended up raising over 60,000. I think the final number was 63,000.
Crikey.
Yeah, that definitely ended up being a bit of a bigger deal and a little unexpected. Like, I remember back then I was discussing with our little team and I was like, okay, so what is like the craziest amount of money we're gonna get? I don't know, 25. All right, so what's like the craziest stretch goal we're gonna do? So at 25,000, without the intent of ever really making it, I put, we'll make a digital version of the game, right? And then we hit the 25,000 like halfway through and I'm like, whew, okay, now I need to figure out how to make a digital version of this, which we ended up doing, and I'm actually really happy with it. It's even like something you don't even have to download a client, it's just in a browser, which is really cool. But yeah, anyway, but that was really it. Like, we did Kickstarter before and we had a really positive experience with it. So it just kind of felt like a natural extension of it. One of the other problems we were facing is while I was looking for funding, I was able to get funding from smaller private sources, right? But I didn't really want to work with like the big, I don't know how to, you know, the venture capitalists. Let's just call it how it is, you know, like the people that buy into a project and then as quickly as possible want to milk it for all of the money and then just run away. Like, this, if you want to get money, you can go to those people. But the problem is that they don't care about what you're making and they will kill it if that means they make a profit. And I didn't really want to go that way. And then the other problem was that if you go to a publisher and you tell them card game, they're like, cool. And then you tell them, I don't want to sell packs. And then they're like, yeah, well, but we want to sell packs. And so that didn't really go anywhere, honestly. We had quite a few lengthy discussions with some publishers. And honestly, they were really happy with every element of the game except for our monetization. And I'm just but I don't want to sell packs to people, you know, like I just think this is something that's so predatory. If I did the same thing in other games, you know, like people would get super, I don't know, they would just get upset that this is blatantly pay to win and very, very frustrating. So considering those factors, and then you consider that we had a pretty positive experience of Kickstarter in the first time we did it, it just kind of felt like the natural choice, you know? Kind of made sense.
Okay, how has this campaign been different from the Disasters one?
So what's the first really big different thing is we are trying to raise a lot more money. Again, for Disasters, we started out with 7,000. Now we have our initial goal set at 100,000. Which I understand that sounds like a lot of money, but something that's very important to me personally is transparency, right? I want to be clear about what's going on. And to be honest, like, I could have probably set the Kickstarter lower. I could have said, okay, we'll set it at 70,000 or 80,000 or something like that. But I couldn't justify it, right? I couldn't justify it in the way that this is enough money to actually finish the game in the state that I want to finish it. Like, we've been developing the game for a while now, and I know how much it costs. And as I mentioned earlier, like, we have a relatively big team. And I didn't want to, like, if I set it lower and then somebody asked me, well, how is this enough money? I wouldn't have been able to give an honest answer. And I didn't want to do that. The other thing that's quite a bit different is, first of all, it's digital, right? Like, this one is supposed to be a digital game from the beginning. But secondly, we actually have a fully playable demo available, like you mentioned. Now, it's a little bit you know, it's an alpha. Like, yeah, I mean, it is an alpha. I don't really know how else to say it. Like, we tried to get something out there. What we wanted to do is we wanted to have a version of the game available so people can, like, go to our Kickstarter, have a look at, see, like, have a look at everything, see if they like what is available there. And then also actually try the game and see that there actually is a game, right? One of the scary things about Kickstarter is always you don't really know, are these people even going to make a game I like? And will they make a game at all? And in our case, both of those things are very easily, like, verifiable. You can just download the game, try it out, see if you like it. And, well, we already made a game. I mean, we're not going to stop now. And, like, it's already there. Let's go ahead and finish this thing.
Okay. Have you noticed any issues coming up with the campaign that you could attribute to the ongoing world health crisis?
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's frankly speaking, a little bit of a disaster. I mean, that's maybe like a little bit of a rough way to describe it. So we have been doing pretty well, I would say. So we're currently in, we're currently on day 8 of our campaign, and we have currently raised €47,238, which is quite a lot of money. It is, however, not enough. All right, we are still €53,000 off of what we need. We're just about at the halfway point. And while I'm pretty happy with how far we've come already, I know that from our established community, talking to, you know, the people that want to support us, there's a lot of them right now that are just either worried about the future, you know, they're like, you know, I don't really want to take money out of my savings right now because I know it is, I just don't know how certain my future is right now. Or people that just blatantly lost their jobs and just can't afford to put money into a Kickstarter. And that's perfectly fair, right? Like, absolutely. That is so, so fair. I view the current situation as just something where it's just very unfortunate timing. Sadly, I didn't really have an option to, like, do the Kickstarter sooner or later. Because, well, there's just not that much funding left, right? Like, we tried to do the Kickstarter as late into development so that the alpha or like the demo we are putting out is as strong as possible. And honestly, considering that the game is supposed to be released in November, I think the demo that we have currently is actually pretty good. I'm pretty happy with it. But yeah, I mean, I've just been like a little ball of stress that's really just waiting to explode or implode, depending, doesn't really matter. As the month progresses, we have 21 days left to raise 53,000, and no, really hoping we'll be able to do so. You know, it's important. It's not just that I feel now, so I've put a lot of my own money into this, right? I've put about €90,000 into this project of my own savings, which is a lot. It's like a majority of my money.
It's not a small amount, no.
Yeah, it's not a small amount of money, right? And the thing was that I started this when there was no coronavirus going around. And now we're really hoping we'll get there, because not only would it, of course, be like very much a personal tragedy for me, let's put it that way, right? Like, I would be incredibly disappointed and upset, but it's not just about me. I would actually be much more upset that I wouldn't be able to keep going with my staff, right? We wouldn't be able to continue working on the game, and you know, it would put them into quite an unfortunate situation as well. And frankly, I don't really have any good news here. There's really no upside. So what I'm doing, you know, is I'm trying to reach as many people as possible. I'm trying to tell as many people as possible about the project. I think we have some very fair reward tiers. Like, I think they're pretty solid, pretty, you know, pretty friendly. And it's just so difficult, right? Like, right now, how do you ask people for money when everybody knows that right now is just a freaking worldwide economic crisis waiting to happen, but what am I to do? So in the end, if you can support the Kickstarter, if this is something that is appealing to you, we appreciate every small contribution. Every little thing counts, every little thing matters. And if you can't, like frankly speaking, let's just leave it at that. If you can't, right, or if you don't want to, this is totally acceptable. Like, I have no problem with that. I fully understand that. If I had a choice, I would have not done this right now. But nonetheless, you know, I think we have a cool product. If you like card games, like, please go ahead, give the demo a try. If you like lore and stuff, like, maybe look at our trailer. Like, I had a really cool, like, animated classic 2D animation trailer made, which I'm really proud of.
Yes, it's really good.
Yeah, so, you know, kind of like have a look at that maybe. And but
if you have a spare 5,000 euros, there's a pledge level at that.
Yeah, we actually have somebody that went for it. Crazy, right?
That's fantastic. It's good that someone's so confident in your product that they're willing to drop that amount.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm incredibly thankful, right? But again, like, what we're trying to create, what the situation we're hoping to create is something where you don't just have to trust us, right? I think it's so easy to ask for trust, but trust, while it's valuable, I think it's always better to have like a layer of security, right? No matter how much I believe somebody, no matter how much I trust somebody, I would always rather just have a layer of security. Security is not a trust issue. And so that's why, you know, we've made a demo available where you can go and play against our players and try the game already. And you know, like, we also have a track record of actually delivering the games. Like, we already made a previous product that we did end up shipping, and, you know, we're almost sold out. Still got a few copies here, but not that many. So, yeah. Anyway, like, no, that blew my mind. That was a fun evening when we got that one.
So the game's going to be free to play. There's going to be no card packs. All cards are going to be available straight away. How's the game going to make money to keep the surface running?
Cosmetics. It's so easy. It's so easy. Look, I don't know. If you are a card game player, right? Like, I don't know how many of you like screw up playing or like started playing card games with Hearthstone, but I'm somebody, I was playing card games when I was 6 years old. When I was 10 years old, I was traveling to Yu-Gi-Oh! Tournaments regularly. And you know what we did? We wanted to customize our deck, so we would get like cards and we would paint on them. Right? And that's something people do to this day. It's called card alters. And now there's people that do it professionally, and, you know, they get paid for it. And something like Magic the Gathering, what they've started to doing, they started selling secret layers, which is literally just reprints of old cards that are popular, but with new fancy artwork. What we can do is we can create so many interesting, fun-looking, cool-looking cosmetics for the different cards. So something that we did for the Kickstarter is we actually have some, like, at 50 euros, you get a set of four alternative artworks for, like, four of the main legendary creatures that we currently have in the base set. And it each depicts them at, like, a younger age when they were doing something that was, like, really relevant to their story and onto the world, and something that's, like, important, an important part of their journey, of their personal growth that got them to where they are right now. And, you know, I think there's so much you can do there, so many cool, interesting things. And we really have a world that, like, lends itself to that as well, I think. So that's something I'm actually not so worried about. I think allowing people to customize their decks, allowing them to, you know, like, really create a cool collection of alternate artwork that they can use to have their own style, even if they are playing a deck that would be considered meta, is just kind of neat. And I don't know, I personally really like it. I mean, something we're already doing is we have the development artwork in the demo. And there's, like, a lot of people that prefer using that over the actual finished artwork, which is a little silly, you know. The demo artwork was made by my wife in an afternoon, and each of the, you know, like, each of the actual finished artwork is made in, like, a slow, careful process by professional artists, but they're okay. You go ahead. Here's the demo artwork. Go ahead. So that's something I'm surprisingly not really that worried about. Like, I think there's lots of ways to actually make some money there. I mean, of course, it requires the community to participate, but what doesn't, right? Like, we are really here together with the community.
Okay, final question. Are there any plans after early access to release on other platforms?
Oh, we definitely want to do mobile. That's like one of the like immediate things, right? Like right now we're only on PC because this is just a demo, like it's an alpha. But I absolutely, we want to go on mobile. Like that's one of the things that was always part of the consideration. And then if we get an opportunity to, this is something that's really just kind of like in the future, possibly, maybe, hopefully, possibly, would be Switch. I think it would be cool to have it on the Switch. I like the Switch. The Switch is awesome. So I think that would be really neat. And but that's something that's really more of like maybe possibly. Well, it's 100% the goal to release the game at release on mobile as well.
Okay, well, thank you very much for coming on and talking to us. We got some news to quickly rush through because that lasted a bit longer than I expected.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's completely fine. We've learned a lot about the game. People can check out the link to the Kickstarter in the show notes and pledge towards the game. Help it see the light of day, but as you say, you can play the demo already.
Well, yeah, help the finished product see the light of day, because if we don't reach this money, what we'll do is we'll just have to like release it as is, and oh yeah, there's some problems.
Okay, first news piece I wanted to bring up. So in 2010, a game was released that got a lot of, people cried out saying that it was a bad game and it sent a bad message. It's called Hatred. And critics didn't like it, including ourselves. So we scored it very, very poorly. And yet it released to much aplomb on Steam. It got mostly positive reviews, and that's after it was taken off and then put back on, as games often do on Steam, or they used to. Steam are a bit not strict about what content goes up anymore. But yes, it's a game where your character has had a bad day, so you decide to go out and murder everyone and try to get cop killed. Murder by cop. Suicide by cop. So yeah, you might be able to tell why critics didn't like it. And it's coming to Switch.
Really?
The fuck?
Yeah.
Well, out of all consoles, that's not the one I expected.
I mean, the Nintendo have been going out of their way to show that the Switch is not it's a kiddie console, because there's games that have released on PlayStation 4 and Switch that are that have been edited on the PlayStation 4, but not on the Switch, that show certain titillating images.
I was going to say the Senua games on Switch are not censored, whereas they're censored on PS4.
Yeah. Now you might argue, but the Switch has parental controls, so what's the problem? Well, the problem is that not every parent enables the parental controls. So some kid's going to download Hatred, and that's quite a violent, graphic, gory game.
I'm just quite surprised that it's actually even coming to Switch, given how old it is.
Yeah, that's like really odd, isn't it? Just feels like asking for more outrage to like again generate that outrage revenue.
That's true. They might be saying, oh, we're coming to Switch, so people start going back and checking out on Steam. Yeah, I thought that was an interesting thing worth noting, at least.
This is it's definitely interesting, but it's difficult to like really even have anything to say about it, right? Like, it's anything other than stunned silence. What do you even do?
Well, we'll move on to our next topic. It's a bit lighter. Final Fantasy VII Remake. Nikki, you said you've been playing it. So have 3.5 million others within the first 3 days following its 10th of April release.
Yeah, so I found this kind of interesting. Especially considering as well that obviously the game did kind of technically launch early because of the whole situation we're in, the logistics. We spoke about that before. That aside, this figure is actual sales counted from essentially its launch day to 3 days prior, including pre-orders as far as we're aware. 3.5 million in 3 days is awesome. But here's a fun little runoff of some statistics, which I found quite interesting, because I had a look into this earlier. For comparison, the original Final Fantasy VII, when it released back in Japan, way back when, sold 2 million copies in the first 3 days. Final Fantasy XV sold 5 million in 24 hours when that released back in 2016. God, was it that long? Kingdom Hearts 3, Square Enix's other big release, which came out last year, sold 5 million in 2 weeks. And Final Fantasy 13, which you could argue was the last mainline entry before 15, because obviously 14 is online, so it's a little bit different to count. Although, for argument's sake, Final Fantasy 14 has 18 million registered users as of the end of 2019. But Final Fantasy 13 sold just under a million in its first 24 hours when it released in Japan back in 2009. I guess, for Square Enix and the 7 Remake. Bearing in mind as well that the game only released on PS4, an Xbox version will be coming out next year because it's an timed exclusive, and there's speculation of a PC version as well. So that number is definitely going to go up. I think Final Fantasy VII lifelong sales has reached about 15 million now as well, and that game came out in 1997. But I find it fascinating.
That's been released on a few platforms by now.
Yeah, exactly. Well, on PlayStation alone, it sold 10 million by the mid-2010s, so I'm speculating, pure speculation, that it must have sold at least 15 million across all platforms. But the reason I bring it up, and the reason I found that interesting, is because, I don't know if people can remember, but way back when, Square Enix were actually really bad for setting their expectations on sale numbers ridiculously high. That is why we haven't had a new Deus Ex in years, is because they turned around and said Mankind Divided didn't perform well, by which it didn't perform well by like something ridiculous, like over 5 million units. One of the Tomb Raider games, they were like, oh, underperformed. We expected it to sell 12 million. And it's like, what?
Jesus.
Yeah. So they seem to have died down a bit, but it's interesting as well because I know I said about how like there's been this weird split on the ending. Again, not there. The same happened with Kingdom Hearts 3. Kingdom Hearts 3 sold a lot because as a series, we'd all been waiting years and years for it. It is a game that has divided the fan base of Kingdom Hearts. Personally, I'm kind of done with Kingdom Hearts because 3 was massively disappointing. You can at me on Twitter if you disagree. but otherwise, yeah. Kudos to the team for making a solid game that's sold well, but we'll see how it goes from here, I guess. I'd be curious to know if it can be that 5 million in 2 weeks, who knows?
What I found interesting was, although Activision don't no longer release actual numbers of copies sold, they did announce that Call of Duty Modern Warfare made $600 million in its opening weekend. If you average that out to $60 per copy, that's about 10 million. And yeah, I'd expect if that sold 10 million, then I would have said that Final Fantasy VII Remake could definitely shift about 3.5, given the different audiences and different amount of available platforms. Well, let's end the podcast with just... Well, Nikki, you wanted to mention the update for Animal Crossing we teased at the start of the pod.
Yes, so Animal Crossing is getting a new update on Thursday, I think. I think, pretty sure it's Thursday.
It's the 23rd, so yeah.
Yes, 23rd. There's a lot coming in. Nintendo released a trailer that shows lots of cool things, but to give you the lowdown, I'm quite excited. We're getting a whole load of new events over the next couple of months, so thankfully not Bunny Day. Ooh, no more of that. Nature Day, National Museum Day, a couple others. But the main things that are coming in this upgrade are new characters who will provide new services. There's going to be expansions to the museum. There's going to be an artwork collection. The alpacas are coming back. I can't pronounce their names, but they're adorable. And everyone's really excited about bushes. Apparently bushes is my group of friends who will play Animal Crossing were losing their mind earlier because bushes are coming back, and I'm just like, didn't even know there weren't bushes to begin with. So yes, there's more of what you like returning, coming, joining. Look, it's Animal Crossing.
Given that you're always trying to marry ship girls in Azur Lane, are you excited for wedding season that's going to be running throughout June?
No, because from the trailer it makes it look like you're just the photographer. That's boring. Yes. I don't want to be the photographer. I want to be marrying people.
The press release says that during a nuptial themed June, players can visit Harvey's Island to meet the married couple Reese and Cyrus, as well as help arrange and take anniversary photos with them in the wedding picture studio. Players will get wedding themed items as a token of the couple's gratitude.
My storage is full enough as it is. Just let me marry someone.
So you don't want to spend a month taking photos and getting wedding-themed couches?
Yeah. Bunny Day was bad enough.
I still don't know what that is. Right, well, thank you for joining us, Philip. And thank you for joining me, Nikki and Psychopathic. Make sure you check out Chroma, Bloom and Blight. The Kickstarter link is in the show notes. You can download the demo on Steam right now. Give it a go. The tutorial is getting patches.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah, so make sure you check that out and pledge to it if you are able. Thank you for listening, and an even bigger thank you for subscribing, whether it's via Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or our RSS feed. You can leave a review on iTunes, follow us on Spotify, or post a cheeky comment on GameGrin.com. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and Twitch too. And while you're at it, game on.